You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
Welcome to the 30-minute pre-show, I guess. We've got to drink some beer to get our blood alcohol content up.
We got to get rocking here. We got five in front of us and basically just got started. I think you said it was a coincidence that the Happy Hour show pre-song or the intro song was going, and we weren't even paying attention, so we're game time.
There was some sort of... I don't know, connection to the, there's some headphones. It was some sort of connection we had with the song, the beers, the time of day.
The force is with you, Curtis.
The fact that it's Thursday. Yeah, I'm ready for some beer. I was up for 2 hours in the middle of the night last night, and...
Did you have little beers of, or cans of beer dancing in your dreams? Or why did you have 2 hours in the middle of the night?
I'm not sure. Tomorrow morning, I have to get up at about 4:30 in the morning.
Oh, you're worried about the move.
And I must be, yeah.
Not even your move, and you're worried about it.
I'm just like co-pilot, but this is our flight plan, so to speak, is a little loosey-goosey for me. It's not nearly as...
So you're basically saying it's like a commuter plane. Okay, so a little context for everyone, though, who may be listening and for the playback later. Your brother is moving.
Yeah, my brother.
And you got roped into helping him as the wingman, sidekick, co-pilot, whatever analogy, metaphor you want to make.
Sure, yeah. And
it starts at 4:30.
Well, he asked me to, and I said, sure. I mean, it sounds like fun. Leaving early, we hit 15, and then where it turns into 40, and then it's 40 all the rest of the way to North Carolina. So it's
straight east.
It's like one turn, one right-hand turn.
are there any cool stops in the way? Are there any breweries you plan to hit? Because, I mean, I imagine the sections of the 40 I know are pretty sparse.
Right, so there's our first stop is going to be Albuquerque, and there's a couple of breweries there that got some really good reviews, so I'm going to stop in.
If you were able to deviate a little bit and run through Tempe, you could stop at Four Peaks.
Yeah, no, that's probably not going to happen. That'll be a little too early to stop and to have a beer. But
is it ever really too early? I mean, because it's almost a 7-hour drive to Tempe. So if you're leaving at 4:30, you're going to get there at lunchtime.
I know. It is if you've got to put in like a 13-hour driving day.
All right,
touche. So and not only that, but then I lose an hour on the way out too. So not only is it 13, but then you lose an hour. So really, it's going to be like 8 o'clock in the evening before we stop. So yeah, no, I don't want to put another stop in the middle of that, but.
On the way back, you should consider it, unless you're flying.
Oh, no, yeah. So part of the reason why we're doing this is we've got his van loaded up. His family just left this morning. They're all there. We get out there on whatever day it will be. It'll be Sunday night. And then I get on the plane Monday morning, and I fly back. And it's a tough trip for me because usually on the way back, I'm always driving. And so I can load up. And so this trip is actually in reverse. So I'm going to be driving through all this great beer land and these great new beers. And then I won't be able to bring any of it back.
Could you contract Weird Driving to help you out with that? Maybe you guys could ride back together?
We should see about that.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
it sounds almost as aggressive as the trip that my buddy Eric. Eric is sitting in listening to the show live here today. What we're going to be doing on Sunday. He roped himself into some Duck Duck Goose from Lost Abbey. And their pickup is Sunday morning. Down in San Diego. So we're driving, we're leaving at what time, 5? And yeah, 5 a.m. He's going to pick up a mic and add some input, but I think 5 a.m. is our departure. We're driving down to San Diego, picking up at Lost Abbey sometime in the morning around post-breakfast.
Yeah.
and then we're going to drive another hour?
Yeah, going to Alpine.
Another hour east to Alpine for lunch.
Some serious IPAs.
I've wanted to go there forever, too. That'll be a nice trip.
And
nice
one of the guys in the car has already made the stipulation that he wants to be home by 6. And my wife is like, are you guys crazy? Why don't you just get a hotel room and make a whole day of it?
We'll take a train.
We'll see after he has a few beers.
Right.
It would be easier to manipulate his decision.
So you've used the term roped into it for me, and then you used it for you. I don't think you were necessarily roped into anything. I mean, that has a certain sort of rodeo, you're going against your will, kind of. You've got your hands and your feet.
I think it's still appropriate because basically he used enough fancy language and and enough analogy about the quality of the beer we're going to be able to check out to rope me into submission. You know, like when you're watching the rodeo and they throw that rope out there initially and it gets the calf or the cow around the neck, they fight a little bit at first. They're like, oh, I don't want to do this. This isn't happening. No. But eventually they give in.
There was no having to twist his arm behind his back.
I say, are you a rodeo star? Is that what? Is that
more
the moral
like a rodeo
of the story?
Clown.
A rodeo clown.
All I had to say was road trip, beer, San Diego.
Right. Oh, sure. Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah.
But no, it should be a cool trip. Well, like I said, we're going to go down, hit Lost Abbey and Port because they're in the same building. I don't know if they're going to be pouring anything from Port, but.
Yeah, they have always got Port on tap.
And then we're going to hit Alpine for lunch. Eric's going to do some tasting and figure out what we should be bringing back. On the way back, we're going to try to hit Society a amount of time. So it should be a nice little round trip. It's just an aggressive day. I mean, we're looking at 11, maybe 12 hours worth of driving throughout the day.
Jason, you'll be driving from Alpine.
Exactly.
Well, not only that, but then as you're coming back this way, it is not going to be fun.
Well, the hope is that everyone's still going to be out for the holiday weekend, and we're going to miss traffic.
Yeah, good luck with that. That's always.
We
that's
might be staying overnight in Oceanside.
Right.
That's what we're telling the guy. He's got to get back early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I came back from, I'm trying to think of where it was. It was Memorial Day weekend, and we came back on Monday. And I've been stuck before to Santa Barbara, where it's taking me like 3 hours to get from Santa Barbara here. And then, so you might get lucky, because now on that Memorial Day weekend, we came back on that Sunday, and we just flew right through there. So
yeah, and basically anytime there's a holiday, the traffic heading southbound from Ventura is really hard because people come up from L.A. and they get out of the city. But, you know, what we were talking about hitting Society on the way back, and what's cool, recently I picked us up some of their stainless steel growlers. They have this really awesome cage and pop top, and we're hoping to fill those on the way back. But, you know, we were talking just before we came on air about the new growler law here in California that's going to allow breweries to fill other breweries' growlers as long as they slap their little label or sticker over it. What do you any thoughts on that one, Curtis?
It's about damn time. I mean, there's plenty of other states that let you do this, and it's ridiculous that it's taken this long.
I haven't told Bree yet, Eric, but I think she's going to be super excited about this law because my growler collection is starting to grow in the cabinet. We're running out of room.
Yeah, I can get rid of some now.
I think I'll either donate them to charity or recycle them. I'm not sure. Anyone that is just mundane or not exciting to be on the shelf, I think has got to go.
Well, one of the things that... So I've got some. I won't be getting rid of any of mine.
Oh, you're...
I'm a hoarder.
Yeah, you're a loyalist.
I won't be getting rid of any of... Especially the common ones that you're saying, you know, the mundane, whatever word you use. Only because there's plenty of times where people have wanted some homebrew to go home, and I'll give them a growler, and then I don't see that growler again.
Good touch.
And so then these ones that I don't care if I get back, fine. Have it. I don't care if it comes back to me.
The voice of logic has struck me.
Mm-hmm. So you just hold on to them, because you'll end up giving them away eventually.
Touché.
It's just another form of recycle.
You know, right. The way we've been going lately, though, at least me personally, I've been getting the 32-ounce growlettes or bombers. It depends on where you're at.
Grenades.
But I've been going with the 32-ounces because they're easier to store for me. And once I open it, I feel bad if I let it sit too long and then it gets wasted. So I've been going with the smaller size.
Like the Southwell one from Surf, is that what you're talking about? Like a double serving, basically, instead of a four serving?
It's a 32 ounces, and we can usually finish that in a single sitting.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. That's a good idea. If you're going to open up a growler by yourself right now, you've got to be pretty serious about what you're going to do.
And there's something cool about having that, like you said, that grenade or even like a bombshell kind of shape that fits in your hand like that. I mean, if you really want to be bad dude, just ornery, and stand on the corner with one of those, you would look. It's way better than a 40. It doesn't have that ugly tapered look of a 40-ounce bottle. You can just stand out with your 32-ounce growler on the corner.
It fits in a paper bag, too.
Yeah, it'd flex your muscle a little bit.
I don't know how badass you look drinking craft beer out of a stainless steel growler.
It's a state of mind.
But that's right. It's a badass state of mind. Because, like, to me, 40, an OE 40, now a home wrecker, now that's bad news right there. That's a badass.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, now that's $30 worth of beer in that growler.
Yeah, unfortunately, the growler doesn't show the dollar amount on the outside, though, so no one can gauge you by that.
Right.
You could always put craft beer in the OE empty canister. Yeah.
You're onto something right there. I think that's a good idea.
I think that's called fronting.
Is that a twist top on that? Do those have twist tops?
Is that something you learned from being a townie, fronting?
That was a college thing.
Oh, all right. I didn't have any of that. Of course, I didn't have a huge craft beer scene when I was in college.
That seems like a Will Smith. He's fronting Max and chilling in the car. He spent all day waxing.
Yeah, that was hardcore Eugene.
I'm excited, though. You know, we're talking about craft beer and the fact that when I was at Purdue, didn't have a lot of craft beer scene. I was graduating in 2001. But it's been picking up lately. There's some craft breweries and microbreweries growing up in Lafayette and down in Indianapolis. So when I'm out next month, October, I'm hoping to hit a couple of them. People's Brewing is a new cool favorite of mine that I found out last year when I was down for the half marathon. And they just recently expanded. It's pretty cool. They added a big fermentation room and reached out to the back of their building, so they're going to have more storage and be able to up their production, which is pretty cool because that means that they're getting enough of a following that maybe some of those Midwestern brewers will start making their way out to the exterior of the country. Hopefully it shows a trend.
Those Midwestern brewers are definitely making a splash.
Oh. Yeah,
if you're flying into Chicago.
I like his metaphor there. Making a splash.
No pun intended.
No, but it is cool because I think obviously with the coast in general, you get a culture with music and food and obviously the beer and brewing scene that we've been seeing as of the past, I don't know, 2 years maybe. But the interior is starting to catch on as well, and they're watching what California, Colorado, the East Coast are doing with their recipes and their styles, and they're trying to recreate that and get that interior of the country on board and educated about craft beer and unique beers. So hopefully, you know, they really start expanding and proving people on the coast that, hey, it's not just about super malty or super light, but they can hit some IPAs and they can do some barley wines. And obviously we've had some great breweries at the Firestone Walker, like Three Floyds and, you know, some of those. But I think some of the smaller craft breweries are starting to pick up the pace too.
Well, and I think maybe just a downside of that, you know, we've talked before about how IPAs in the middle part of the country aren't the same kind of IPAs that we get out here. And I think for the most part, there's a lot of breweries that are emulating that, a West Coast IPA, and they're doing a really great job. So you go and you can get all these really great, aggressive, citrusy, piney, grapefruity kind of beers all over the country, but the ones that are standing out are the ones that are different now, or the ones that have resisted the urge to make a West Coast style IPA. And so I mean, I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate just a little bit, just because when I look for an IPA, that's what I want. And for a long time growing up in the Midwest, you couldn't find anything like that. And now that they're getting it, I'm kind of, I don't know, disappointed that I can't find something that's maybe just a little bit different. And so, I mean, it's almost becoming homogenized just
sure.
a little bit. But
I think that's a good point, though. Eric, you remember when we were out last year and we came back, I had some of that Backroad Brewery from LaPorte, Indiana, right near my hometown, about 20 minutes from Michigan City, Indiana. And they had an IPA, but they labeled it a Midwestern IPA. So they were in no way trying to, you know, replicate a West Coast style or even say that they were close to it. It was a little more malty, had some nice caramel undertones, a little bit of butterscotch. Eric's not a malty guy.
Butterscotch is not a good thing in an IPA.
But it did, I know it's not your style, but it did have a little bit of a hot presence in the nose, a slight bit of resin on the palate. Definitely not what we're accustomed to out here. And if I were to put them side by side, I would have said initially, this is not an IPA. But at least, like you said, there's a uniqueness there, and they're making a beer that genuinely is not a duplication of what we got on the coast.
Yeah, and one of my favorite breweries out of Minnesota, Summit Brewing Company, and they had my favorite IPA was from them. And it was, for me, it was stylistically a perfect IPA. It had a little bit of copper color. It had a little bit of malt, and it had a really pleasant, not overpowering, kind of assertive hop flavor and bitterness to it. And the last time I was home this summer, I couldn't find it. Instead, they have a new IPA out that's more like an XPA, where it's almost all hops and there's no malt, backbone at all to kind of balance it out. And while I enjoyed it, it wasn't the same. And I was a little, I don't know, upset's too big of a word, but kind of disappointed that they didn't have this available anymore, at least in my store, and I'm sure that they still make it. It's especially seeing as how that was the IPA that I really tried to emulate my first IPAs after, just by the perfection that was in that bottle. And so, you know, as some of these breweries that have really great followings and reputations, they, you know, they're trying to keep up, maybe, or trying to keep up what they think is keeping up.
Sure.
And for a good reason, because, I mean, you have Surly that's making, Furious is one of my favorite double IPAs. It's, I mean, they call it an IPA, but really it's a double IPA. One of my favorite IPAs, and it's probably outselling everything, you know. And so they look at that and go, we're losing market share. We've got to kind of kick this up a little bit. So,
well, you know, the other category that's really making a rise, and Eric, I think you're going to have a good perspective on this, is the sour category. And the population is really starting to gravitate towards the uniqueness of a sour. The experimentation and the kind of creativity of a sour. And Upland, and I'm using these Indiana breweries because I grew up in Indiana and they're right in the heart of the country for me. But Upland has got some great sours and lambics, and you've been experimenting yourself with sours and brewing at home. Do you think that's something that's gaining momentum, or do you think it's going to be a fad?
Yeah, no, sours are definitely coming around. People are getting familiar with the process, and especially the, I think the breweries with who are a little more established, who have the ability to let a beer sit for, you know, 12 to 18 months, because that's an investment that you don't see payback on real quick.
Sure.
So, and it's space for the barrels. It's the barrels themselves.
I was going to ask what you think you're, how do you manage the risk? Because a lot of breweries, obviously beer can handle the bacteria. When we're talking beer versus wine, winemakers don't want any of the bacteria the beer makers love within miles of their vineyard and their, you know, their winery. But brewers like it. However, if you have an established line with a base, you know, a set of beers you're already making, you don't want them infected with any weird bacteria. How do you manage that risk?
What I've seen is some brewers will have a completely separate facility to store their barrels and their bugs, so they don't risk infection. Others, like Tommy Arthur at Lost Abbey, keeps them all in the same room. But as long as you have really stringent janitorial practices,
I can relate to being on the sanitation crew.
Yeah, like I'm super clean when I'm brewing, and I use the same equipment for my sours and for my clean beers. I still haven't had a problem yet.
Knock on wood.
But it is a risk, and obviously my risk is much lower financially than someone who's brewing anywhere from 5,000 to 100,000 barrels a year.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, some of these breweries are going to get bit in the butt, because it only takes one mistake.
It's to replace everything.
Right. One bug that you miss, and it may not show up for 10 or 15 batches, but by the time that thing has replicated enough, and it's throughout everything, you know. I'm of the Firestone Walker camp. You keep everything. It's a beautiful thing, but you keep it as far away from your clean beer as possible. And you know, on the homebrew level, I have
and
two.
They've got miles of separation between their two.
Yeah, not only that, because what is it, an hour and a half between its difference? But, you know, at home, I've got two separate kegs, and one is a light sour and one is a dark sour, and I have my own taps for that. The only thing I don't have, though, which I should, is my gas lines. I mean, if I was truly germophobic, I would keep even the gas lines that plug into that as a separate set of equipment. But that one I don't. I just got a new beer fridge, and I'm contemplating on putting a sour tap on that fridge. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But
I don't think it's a bad idea.
I'm willing to give it a shot, but there wouldn't be nothing that is ever in that. I mean, because it just takes so long. And then once it's there, then it's either good or it's bad. And so then it's either going to be gone or it's just going to be, you know, we'll just be waiting for the next batch to come through.
We had an intense sour last night. That Flanders-style red that you guys pulled out.
Yeah, that was Vibes Ventura Beer Enthusiast.
It was super tart, my friend.
The Homebrew Club, yeah. They, everybody, 18 months ago, something like that, yeah, everybody donated 5-10 gallons of base beer into a barrel, 60-gallon barrel, mm-hmm. and what came out was pretty highly acidic.
Yeah.
And true to style, really tasty beer. A little acetic acid in there just to round it out nicely. And,
it was.
Yeah,
it had to be one.
Actually, had a glass before I came down.
Oh, did you? We've talked about this before, and people would probably call me crazy or say bullshit to me, but I think sour beers are fun because a lot of times they're a low alcohol percentage. There's almost a settling of the stomach that can occur, and it's a great palate cleanser, ultimately.
Probiotics.
Yeah, but the thing that that beer we had last night, it was probably one of the tartest sours I've ever had, with great oaky, buttery, vanilla kind of notes, but then I think there was a cedary, dark raisin fig kind of thing going on too. It was complex, but it kicked you right in the teeth in the very beginning.
I don't know if I've ever considered a sour beer as a digestive. That kind of settles my tummy.
I often drink those to settle my stomach.
Seriously, and then you end up getting all those bugs. And I mean, yeast is bad enough because yeast will live all the way through your intestinal tract. But those bugs, we know that they outlive the yeast,
Eric, you can attest. You get my back on this one. The same bugs that are in the sour beers are largely the same bugs you'll find in great natural Greek yogurt. And anything that's got a probiotic component to it.
Yeah, lactobacillus, yeah, you find that in most fermented foods, and it is a component in probiotic pills. And
it helps balance your
drinks.
pH and get things going.
I didn't say it wasn't healthy for you. I'm just saying that if you eat a lot of Greek yogurt, then, and I don't, I understand what Greek yogurt does to you. And how I don't want to be standing around anyone who's been eating a lot of Greek yogurt.
Well, because eventually your system does regulate itself.
Because that probiotic is sitting in there fermenting everything else that comes in. That's why it's so healthy, because it's getting rid of all the other things in your stomach, I guess.
Well, true to your statement, I did have a moment like that the other day.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
That's all right. We don't need to go into detail on that. Hey, it's looking like we should take a break here and then kick off the show in earnest.
Officially.
Officially. I'm pretty well halfway through. I've been saving this one because I really like the double IPA.
You know, I'm really excited about the Scotch Ale, though. There's a lot of IPAs, a lot of hoppiness going on. The Scotch Ale, obviously, color-wise, is the only different, you know, down the line. But I like the flavor. I'm excited about it.
All right. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes.
Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to kick up a couple songs here. And we'll play on through, and then we'll come back in.
Make sure we get our shows right today. This has been the Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis pre-show. I'm Jason Hendrick, the Hungry Man, subbing in for Joby, who's out of town today.
Right, and we'll give you a proper go-to here when we come back.
No worries.
All righty.